Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
We're in the rugby dungeon, and for the first time in the rugby dungeon, we are currently, of course this means nothing to you if you're just listening to the podcast, but we are streaming live on Facebook, right?
Yeah, we are on Facebook Live. I think we are. Yeah, it says live, so that will
all
be...
All right, so in future, generally it'll be on a Wednesday night. Wednesday? Where did I get that from?
No idea.
Generally it'll be on a Sunday night, but make sure I'm having a breakdown live on the pod.
You do not want to know what goes on in the rugby dungeon on a Wednesday night.
Oh, God, no. That's when the mirror and the...
Facebook Live to be on.
That's when the mirror, the tripod and the camera's in here, isn't it, Jay?
The mirror, the tripod and the camera. Sounds like the start of a great joke.
But yes, so in future, just generally speaking on a Sunday night, and we'll start bobbing little tweets out on Facebook messages to let you know, but we might well be... you can watch it as we do the podcast. You can see how the sausage is made.
How the fudge is packed. Come and have a look.
Whether that's a good thing or not, you can make up your own mind. But hands in, pod on three. 1, 2, 3.
Pod.
All right, this is a podcast about rugby, the sport we love. Just waiting for... There we go. I'll carry on talking now. The sport we love, but we don't take it or ourselves too seriously. But we are just three massive rugby fans. And we're here to talk about rugby. And thank you very much for listening. I'm Tim. That's JB.
Hello, Tim.
That is Phil.
Hello, Tim.
You are listening, I'm sure, on Acast or iTunes. Hopefully you've subscribed there. And then every episode will be delivered straight to you. You don't even have to think about it. And if you wouldn't mind taking a moment to leave a review on iTunes, we would be very, very appreciative. It really does help. And hopefully it would only be a moment out of your day. And you're more than likely to get one read out as well if it's as entertaining as some of these. Rory O'Neill, 5 stars. 3 chaps as good at podcasting as Miles Benjamin was at hitting rucks.
Yeah, world there we class.
Go. And David J. Terrace, mercy me, good podcast. And this is in reference to the clips we played last week from the old school Jonah Lomu game, the old Bill McLaren and Bill Beaumont commentary. Just have that in your mind. He says, mercy me, this is a good podcast. You may have to dig like a demented mole to find it on iTunes, but once you do, you'll be celebrated on the streets tonight.
Yeah, I quite like that.
If you don't like it, you're one of a kind. Very good. And Gadney, I discovered this podcast about a year ago. It's my listening highlight of the week. JB has some dodgy opinions. He's a prime candidate for playing the Scarecrow in a rugby remake of The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, hang on. What does that even mean? I've never seen Wizard of Oz.
Is that the one that doesn't have a heart or doesn't have a brain? The lion doesn't have a heart.
No, the lion.
I'd have said you're more likely to be a lion.
Yeah,
Tin Man doesn't have a heart.
Tin Man doesn't have a heart. The lion doesn't have courage.
Yeah, he's a scaredy cat.
Huh. Yeah.
So you're kind of
That's Phil with his Phil with your love of safety, health and safety, and player welfare. You're the lion.
Definitely.
I think JB would actually be the one without a heart.
Yeah, I think so.
And a brain.
Phil is pretty heartless, though, to be fair. He's very analytical, cold.
Yeah, facts.
Fact-based.
I just like to get everything aligned. I like to know the facts first.
Well, let's have that in the back, bubbling away in our minds. Maybe you can tell us who would play what role in a remake of The Wizard of Oz. Maybe I'd be Dorothy. At Rugby Podcast, you can find us on Twitter. Leave a review on iTunes. This week, we're going to be talking about the semi-finals of both European competitions. We're going to be looking ahead to some big domestic rugby. There's been Super Rugby going on. We also had St George's Day as well. Phil's prepared a little rugby social game and much more besides. So, which game would you like to kick off with then? Because, Phil, you've watched all the semi-finals. I've watched three out of four.
Yeah, I watched all four. Mm. And quite a lot of Super Rugby. My girlfriend's been away this weekend, so I've been just watching rugby pretty much. With a couple of gym sessions.
And what else, Phil?
And
what else have you been doing with all your...
Cooking some briskets.
Yeah.
Nice.
Anything else?
And what else in the privacy... whatever. No. We know what's been doing. You've been...
Nothing else. Nothing else at all.
How about the game that's freshest in our minds, the game we've just finished watching as we came straight down from full-time, Leicester blowing it against Racing... Dean Carter's Racing 92.
They almost came back in the last few minutes, but for 77 minutes of the game, they were awful.
Yeah,
they just could not keep hold of the ball. They'd make a kind of half break or put a couple of phases together and then just knock it on every single time, which was only kind of... the only reason that Racing didn't run away with it is because they did exactly the same most of the time. They knocked it on almost as many times as Leicester did.
Richard Cockrell's face, with about 10 minutes to go, was just a bit... Every time it cut to him, he was just laughing. I think that it was either he's going to laugh or he's going to cry.
Yeah. Because their back line has been so sharp for most of this season. And they played like some guys who've never played rugby before, never thrown a ball about.
It was very much to me like... I didn't think... What's that noise? Oh, it's my phone.
Your phone, of course.
it felt very much to me like Tigers were going to match up terribly. And the first 2 minutes, I thought the Tigers were going to get absolutely smashed.
When Rococo.
Yeah. Now, does anyone else think that Tigers need a complete rebuild? I mean, they're halfway there, and I know that they're heading a completely different direction to what they were only 2 years ago. And I like what they're doing. But they just seem like a complete and utter... A complete mix-up.
They've got a foot in both camps, haven't they? Which is, I would think back a couple of years, and they're like Wasps have undergone that same transformation, haven't they?
Well, the back line, I think you've got to be pretty happy with the back line. The signings have been superb. Tuilagi coming back, although I've not really seen much of him in the game just gone. They do look sharp, and I think Aaron Major's influence on how they play is brilliant. The pack, though, now we've got two scrummaging props, one of which I addressed last week, Dan Cole, I do not think is world class, and Iurza, I believe, is now a declining player. Now, you think it's more to do with Thacker, but I disagree.
It's interesting that Cockrell's comments, he does actually recognise that there is a problem scrummaging because of the size difference between Thacker and the other two. Those two are good. They're international calibre props.
Well, they are good props.
And Munipola off the bench.
And Munipola. But then you've got the second row. Now, these second row are much more athletic than second rows in previous Leicester teams. And the back row is fairly athletic until you put in a Petty Fanua, who is just a huge man. But he doesn't seem... They all seem to have different... They all seem to belong to different packs. So, like the front row, the two props are there from a big... old-fashioned Leicester pack. Yeah. Like, the two second rows look like they've come straight from Super Rugby. And then you've got a Petty Fanua.
Sounds like the start of a Hollywood film. This ragtag bunch of misfits came together with one aim in mind. I know what you're saying. I think, like you say, it's an evolution of Leicester. And I just wonder whether Richard Cockrell will be part of that evolution or not.
No.
Semi-final, he's probably going to make top four.
You know, when the season is over and they have a look at it and they go, well, a semi-final, on paper, he'll look like he's had a good season. And they'll hold on to top four in the Premiership, definitely. Well, not definitely.
They should.
A good chance.
They should do. It's theirs to lose. They're 6 points clear of Sale, who are currently in fifth with two games to go.
I'll tell you one person who was glad it kind of ended in the way it did, that game between Leicester and Dean Carter's Racing 92.
I know who you're going to say.
That was referee Nigel Owens.
Who
he didn't even disallow a try. He didn't allow Juan Imhoff to go through for a perfectly legal try.
He did disallow a try that was correct because of the forward pass, but he let it play on for so long that you thought he shouldn't have gone back for the forward pass.
Yeah,
exactly.
But the Imhoff try, I mean, Imhoff is 5 yards from the try line. Why not just let him dot the ball down?
Yeah, and why not? This is the other thing. Why did they not give the ball to Rassing? I don't understand that. He said that...
Because he said he blew up when Leicester was still in possession of the ball.
But he didn't, though, did he?
Well, yeah. He kind of didn't know. So, again, it was just another poor... It was a nice little half break and then just a really poor pass again, which was symptomatic of Leicester the whole game from Peter Beetham, who was otherwise very good. But yeah, he would have been... And then when Leicester did score and brought it to back within three, Nigel Owens would have been bricking it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because that could have been a bit of a black mark on his pretty unblemished record.
It was a 14-point decision in the context of the game.
Doesn't JB know?
Yes.
It cost me 40 quid. Furious about the whole thing. At least we know who Saracens are going to beat now, because I've got Saracens as firm favourites after seeing today's game.
If Racing play like they did for the first 2 minutes, they can win. If they play like they did for most of the other 78 minutes, then I'm 100% with you.
Before we move on to the Saracens Wasps game, I just wanted to mention Austin Healy and his little comment before the game. Now, what he was saying is, Juan Imhoff is an amazing player. The language he used on the television made me laugh. He said, my advice to Leicester is they've just got to whack him off. Whack him off. Which, I think maybe in the showers afterwards, Oz, if that's what you want to do.
Oh,
but
Tim. Oh,
I'm
Tim.
Not sure that's highly legal. It made me...
It's absolutely legal.
Two consenting adults in the privacy of the Nottingham City ground showers.
Go for it. But other observations, Chris Mazzoli, huge hits. There was another thing, quite a few people have tweeted us. I didn't notice this during the game, but quite a few people have tweeted us saying they were disappointed that it appeared that Austin Healy was condoning, said some players should have faked head injury or something along those lines.
So if you have a head injury, it was Freddie Burns.
Yeah. He was saying that it would be good. I don't think he was condoning it. I think he said it would be good if you could get him off for a head injury to give him time to recover.
Yeah.
Get to half time, you got the extra 10 minutes and all that.
He wasn't explicitly saying fake an HIA, which I think I saw the other week in a Premiership game, incidentally.
Yeah.
I think it's a fake HIA.
It's a bit like the old Bloodgate, isn't it? That kind of scenario. Dangerous ground.
But storm in a teacup maybe on that one. So then, Saracens Wasps. Just to summarise. Go on.
Saracens Wasps. Joe Rokokoku. When he finally retires, it'll probably be a bit... For me, anyway, it'll be like Prince dying. I already thought that he was dead. I thought that this guy had retired ages ago, but he looks great.
He does look great. Well, he went somewhere else in France, didn't he?
Yeah, I'm sure he was like in lower leagues.
Bayonne. He went to Bayonne for... I'm just looking at his Wikipedia page. For 4 years, from 2011.
He's a Rolls Royce of a player. Not even Rolls Royce.
Something's obviously gone wrong at some point in his career. Because...
What?
No, I mean, like, injuries or something. Oh, sorry. What's up with you, Phil?
Do you know how old he is?
I'm guessing he's mid-30s, right?
37?
He's 32, according to Wikipedia.
How many All Black caps has he got?
61.
And he's played, what, 5 or 6 years in France?
So, 68. This is his sixth year in France.
So, he went to France when he was 26?
According to Wikipedia.
Is that like that American football? There's a high school, one of the highest high school basketball player.
Who's allegedly 30.
who's playing with 16-year-olds and was tipped to be a future NBA first round pick.
If he carries on developing 30. Through to the NBA, he might still make it. You don't know.
Who is that? Was it Joseph Manala or someone who played, who was a Lazio youth player?
Oh, he looks like
looked
40.
About, his own father came out and said he's 36th birthday was a few years ago.
Yeah. Well, there's another one.
It's a bit shady when they get their first passport. I know with some guys that came over to play rugby, I know there was always eyebrows raised and suspicious looks when people said their ages. When some people from far afield came over to play rugby.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty convinced that in the world of rugby league, Stanley Jean is at least 60. At least.
He only retired about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm not going to name him because it'll be embarrassing, but one guy that I played County, South West and South of England rugby with in the back row. He was in the back row with me. And I then remember seeing his name playing for Worcester under 21s when we were both 25. He went back and pretended he was 19 or 20 and played through the whole 21s when he was 22, 23, 24, wow. 25.
God, this guy's developed.
Why?
Because he was, I don't know, he just was living out his dream. He got close to the Worcester first team at one point.
Goodness. By the age of 29.
But he was 25, 26.
That's odd. That's very odd, yeah. Isn't it?
Anyway, I won't name him.
Good. Don't name him.
He then went back to play for his hometown of Henley. That's all, right. I'm going to say.
Henley Hawks. Get onto it.
Henley Hawks, I think. He still plays for. Anyway, that's I've said enough. I'm saying no more.
He's a flanker.
Say no more.
And same age as Tim.
Saying no more.
Henry Hawks.
Saying no more.
Yeah,
say
I'll
no
send more. You some stash if you out him on Twitter.
Right. So Leicester sort of blew it, self imploded. Couldn't catch a rugby ball.
It was probably one of the worst semi-finals I've seen.
It was poor, really.
It was not pretty.
It was poor. So Dan Carter's Racing 92 will be playing
Atoji and friends.
Yeah.
Do you know where the final is?
Prize-winning Marrow.
Is it Barcelona?
Is it Lyon?
No, Lyon. Barcelona's a top 14.
Yeah, Lyon.
It is Lyon.
Yeah. In fact, I want to go to both of them. How close are they? Like week after?
Is it like 13th or 14th of May?
Yeah, it's early. It's within 2 or 3 weeks. They've changed it. Now they've changed the structure from Heineken Cup. They're not back-to-back, the two finals, like they used to be. Yeah. They're about 2 or 3 weeks apart in May.
Yeah, very nice. I would love to go to that.
Yeah, me too.
That would be good. That would be really good. Yeah. Well,
did anyone see it's changing completely now? Did anyone see Crusaders versus Hurricanes?
that's really fine. Let's just jump the tangent. Let's jump into Super Rugby. Let's do it because
this semi-final wasn't great, and the game between the Hurricanes and the
Chiefs.
I'm not even sure that was rugby, actually. It was, they have developed it to such a level, I don't even recognise what I'm watching. It's phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
That was an incredible game. 28-29 finished.
There was one passage of play which lasted for 4 minutes.
Yeah, the core skills that were so lacking in that Leicester Racing game were just... Players don't even look like they're trying. It's just so innate. It seems innate.
You can set your watch by the time of the rucks. You know, they go down 1-2 gone.
They don't bother competing. They just go, oh, let's fan out and
it's a different mentality.
It's kind of a bit more like rugby league in that sense.
That's what Saracens do. They leave the ruck alone, fan out off the line. But the speed of the ball is just incredible. I don't think I've seen a game that good for years.
Hurricanes Chiefs.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a great game.
It was.
As was the Sun Puppies versus the
Crack Hounds.
Kitty Cats.
Fire Dogs, Fire Puppies.
Fire Dogs.
Sun Wolves, Sun Puppies.
Are we ready to announce now that the wheels are well and truly off the Jaguares?
Jaguares.
Well and truly off. They don't do anything well, it seems, outside of being international playboys.
But they in this game, they seem to revert away from the tactic they've been following all season, which is run it from everywhere and offload everything. Mm-hmm. And they actually tried to put some structure in, but they can't even do that against a team that had just conceded 90-plus points to the fifth-best team in the South African Conference 2.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, here's the thing. After their first game, I was like, these boys are serious. They're going to be a real struggle to beat, especially at home. No, pretty simple, actually. Pretty straightforward. After their first game, they did very well for that. I think they came back from, like, 20 points or something.
Yeah.
Incredible. They took the Chiefs, who I've just been lauding a few seconds ago, to about a game within 3 points.
Western Force was the same, isn't this just what happens when you expand?
It might take some time.
Rebels were the same.
Yeah, I tell you what, Rebels was the same.
Everyone was so excited. Oh, they got Sippers, they got Gareth Delve, they got these exciting players, and it really didn't.
But no one has had as much money pumped into them. I mean, I don't know what the actual monetary figure is, but all those players are in. I mean, basically got a whole international squad. So it's not like you just got players and you put them together and hopefully they'll go well. You've just got an international team. They all know each other. They've all played together. They've come off a World Cup.
I think it's maybe that they've come off a World Cup. They're just partying and just having a great time.
I have no doubt that they party.
Like. It does seem like that.
I mean, imagine how hard they're going to party when they start winning. And it will happen.
This was a great game. I loved the atmosphere. in the stadium. Every time the Sunwolves, every time there was a scrum, and every time they made a line break, there was kind of the howls. Which I don't think I'd get into it if it was in any other country in the world other than Japan.
Was it played in Japan? Was it one of the Singapore games?
It was in Japan.
Nice.
It was good. And they played some really good stuff. 2CPC, who's playing at 10, controlled it really well, kicked really well. And I was so pleased when they scored the final try to kind of seal victory in the last minute. It was superb.
Those Jaguars need... I don't know what it is. They don't need any...
Jaguars.
There you go.
They need some coaching, is what they need.
They need something, don't they?
They need someone to coach them. Because it's not leadership, because they've got Augustin Creevy, who's the Argentinian captain, who's a great player.
They've got the Argentinian captain.
But he's trying to control a load of tanned, wealthy playboys.
Can I just say, the pack looks great. I mean, it just looks great.
They look great. They wear that. They don't get changed afterwards, or they have a fresh bit of stash to wear leaving the ground because it looks that good. They're like, I'm going out on the town in this kit.
By the way, a kit which we can't get.
Which we'll come into later.
Right, yes. We'll come to later.
We've tried everything to get one of these kits. We can't get one.
Okay. I'm going to jump back. Before we jump back to the other semi-final in the European Cup and the Challenge Cup, and we talk about the Pro 12, there's been quite a bit of talk about the structure and the future of the Pro 12, so we'll be covering that off. It was St. George's Day early this week, 23rd of April. It was quite funny because I worked at, 23rd of April. It was yesterday.
Yesterday.
Saturday. So I worked at the Man City game there, and it's quite funny that St. George's Day was the day that Man City picked as their kick it out racism awareness day, St. George's Day, which I didn't like, but fine. It's funny that it just says probably more about football than anyway. I'm not going to go into
it. I'm very confused. Where's this going?
It's St. George's Day, but I'm going to. So what I.
Are you saying St. George's Day is the traditional celebration day for racists?
No,
it's ironic.
Yes, I'm saying that some people have in England have commandeered the day, and actually we shouldn't have like pandered to it and gone, let's have a racism awareness day on St. George's Day.
So this is common in your circle of friends, a racist St. George's Day party.
No, but it's a pretty widely held opinion, isn't it?
That, I have no idea. I've not heard that.
I didn't actually know.
The St. George's Cross has been sort of taken as a symbol of nationalism.
Yeah, maybe.
Extreme nationalism.
The symbol of nationalism, yes.
Okay.
Anyway. Let's get back on St. George's. I put out on Twitter, and thank you very much for your help, at Rugby Podcast, a George 15 players...
Racist
players. The most racist team we could think of. And
Joe Marler,
number one. Joke. Right. No, a team of Georges. So here we go. I'll run down. down the team. We're not. Shall I just give up? Should we just forget this?
No. Because this is podcasting gold. Please continue.
there has genuinely been. An astonishing level of commitment on Twitter and response to this and Facebook.
Right.
So it's very good.
Props were difficult. So if you can help us with props called George or surname or first name, then we need some help. At the moment, we've got Worcester's, or once a Worcester, or it's still a Worcester, I'm not sure, George Porter. Hooker, Jamie George, but there was Shooter and McGuigan as well. George Graham or George Hunter, the Glasgow prop with tight head options.
I did also see George Burgess, albeit he's a rugby league.
Oh, yeah, good shout.
Georgian props, if you run out.
Oh, that's a great shout. Yes.
George. So I'm sure there's some George.
Yeah, we'll just get any generic Georgian prop. Second row, George Cruz.
Yep.
And George, in brackets, Doddy Weir was a lock.
Oh, his
real name's George.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, good knowledge.
But there was George Merrick, there's George Robson.
Yes. He was good on Friday night, by the way.
He was, yeah.
As a pundit on BT Sport.
Back row of George Whitelock. From Crusaders,
one of the Whitelock, one of the four.
Open side, George Smith, number eight, George Stowers.
Good,
yeah.
Half backs, George Grieg and George Ford.
Nice.
And a back line, George North, George PC, George Lowe. And then 14 and 15 struggled a little bit. Moala from the Auckland Blues.
Jordan,
not totally familiar with him. Watkins of Bristol. George Watkins, probably in the Premiership next year, possibly.
Possibly.
I'll put a little asterisk next to that. It's Bristol, let's wait and see. my favourite one that was mentioned by Rawls on Twitter was an ex, he did some good digging on Wikipedia and found George Clutterbuck, which is one of my favourite surnames ever.
That is good. Forward for Gloucester?
Former Gloucester winger, yeah.
Yeah. It was a flanker.
George Clutterbuck.
Yeah, because I think
he was wing fullback or wing centre.
I thought he was wing forward. Would you be a flanker?
George Ayoub to referee. And a quick mention for Ronan Fitzgerald, who said Mamuka George Godza, which I thought was one of the lamest puns that it deserved to be mentioned. And Mark Thomas, who said George Osborne, 1 or 3, because we were struggling with props. No idea whether the Chancellor has played rugby, but I'd love to see him mashed in a scrum.
Pretty sure he hasn't.
And George W. Bush from Harvard, he has.
He has. Getting an interview with George Bush on rugby would be absolutely brilliant.
That would be a proper coup, that.
Wouldn't it just?
Anyway.
Just a quick one, right?
Yeah.
George Clutterbuck, wing forward. Does anyone understand the positions in New Zealand rugby when they talk about...
Three quarters.
Yeah, three quarters, five, ten,
first
five,
five eighths. First 5/8, second 5/8.
Does anyone understand that? Because I don't. And I've asked people to explain it to me.
First 5/8 is scrum half.
Yeah, but why is it called
second 5/8? Fly half, but no, I don't know.
There's only seven. There's eight forward, seven
5/8, 5/8.
I know, it's weird, isn't it? I just have no idea, and I have asked New Zealanders to explain it to me, and they do, and it still makes no sense.
No, I have no idea.
The scrum halves get called scrum half, dummy half, or is that a rugby league term?
That's a rugby thing. Yeah,
that's a rugby league term.
The hooker's the dummy half.
Oh, that's it.
You got a hooker. They kind of go left and right in rugby league a lot of the time, don't they?
All right. Yeah. Well, if none of us know, then I wouldn't mind betting that quite a lot of people don't know. So, can somebody who does know let us know at Rugby Podcast on Twitter? Get in touch with us, however, and tell us why are the three quarters in Southern Hemisphere rugby called as they are, might even just be New Zealand and Australia. I'm not sure if South Africa the same.
I think it's only New Zealand. I'm sure it's only New Zealand.
No, Australia definitely.
New Zealand, Australia
definitely.
I think of it as, but it might be wrong.
But Australia have the same term for their rugby league halfbacks as well.
Maybe it's to do with that then.
I don't think it's a rugby league thing. I will say this though: rugby union. You said left and right. They're starting to use left right centres in defence.
For the centres?
Yeah, for the centres, and they'll start in defence going left, right and right side fields.
You see it with the forwards packs. You see two groups of four, and you kind of split up two of your best ball carriers on either side.
And when you scrum, you generally put if you have the traditional, like, enforcer and athletic second row, you put the enforcer on the right, generally, behind the tight head.
Makes sense.
The extra weight behind the tight head.
Well, Connacht go with... two forwards on one extreme, four in the middle, and two on the other
well,
extreme.
Well, that's actually how Leicester play. That they put they put a back row on each touchline, basically.
Yeah.
So a lot of teams, Wasps play as well. A little, no, less so, but yeah.
It's all evolving rather fast.
Yeah, it is, because then you can have the confidence to go wide and still have someone there to tidy up. Anyway, I mentioned Wasps briefly. Let's quickly get into Sarri's Wasps semi-final. Yeah. Again, really poorly attended for a European Cup semi-final.
Which is very strange for Wasps, who have been doing well with crowds of late.
And Saracens, it's on their doorstep, really.
Yeah, I just don't think Saracens are a big club. I think that's what it comes down to. I mean, they've got all the success in the world. They're great to watch, I think. They've got a new stadium. They just can't seem to generate the fan base, for whatever reason it may be.
Yeah, I do agree with that, in terms of the fan base. With that said, though, they have sold out 80,000+ at Wembley this year for Saracens.
Yeah, well, Saracens, Harlequins.
Yeah.
So that might be Harlequins rather than Saracens.
Well, it was Saracens' home fixture, wasn't it?
Yeah, it is interesting. I'm not... It is interesting. And also, having worked at a couple of Saracens games this year, that it's quite impressive, the whole setup when you're actually there. I think it's 10,000. It feels pretty full. But you realise before the game, when I got there like 4 hours before kickoff, you realise there is several thousand young rugby players and parents already there from like 9 in the morning
on a game day.
Because they have a full, because of the pitch, they can have a full day of tournaments, games beforehand, and then stick around, watch the game afterwards.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But I mean, they are trying. I mean, in fairness to them, they're trying everything to generate numbers. It just might be because of move location again that they just need to, you know, have a bit of stability. So they've been everywhere, from Vicarage Road.
Well, Watford was terribly attended there.
So. Yeah, I went to a game at Watford. I went to watch the debut of Andy Farrell. Wish I never went. Awful game.
But anyway, on to the game itself. And you mentioned him earlier, but hashtag prize-winning Marrow. He looked imperious again. Every stage that he gets challenged with, he looks comfortable.
He does.
And winning Man of the Match awards again.
Unreal. Again. Unreal.
I don't know. It's hard to figure out what is his most impressive attribute. Is it his ball carrying, his work around the ruck, his defence?
His poetry and political nous.
His line-out work is exceptional, both on his own ball and in defence.
I've got to say, I think probably it's a work around the ruck. I love just how he operates. And he's so smart. And I think the best part about him is he makes everything look so simple. And the reason he makes it look so simple is because he's so athletic. I mean, there's the example the other week where he just, you know, got off the line and caught a scrum half. That isn't easy.
Well, no, do you know what? I think it's more than that, because I would argue that the one thing that James Haskell has got, not quite the speed, but he has got the athleticism slash strength slash physical attributes he has got, but he doesn't have that classy rugby brain that Maro Itoje has, which is why we talk about Maro Itoje being able to do all these different things and being so natural.
I just think Maro Itoje's got the ability to see something and do it. I mean, it's basically
But that is so rare. That's the bit that's so rare.
Yeah, he's just a very, very good all-round rugby player. So, well, having said that, there's a good argument that he shouldn't have even been on the field for the final for the final 10 minutes.
Do we want to go there right now?
Should we talk about Christian Wade for a little bit?
If you're thinking, when are they going to bring up Joe Marler, Simon McIntyre, Maro Itoje and etc., just you wait, we will. Anyway.
Yeah, should we talk about Christian Wade for a little bit?
Oh, yeah, let's do that.
Because that break in the first minute.
Electric.
And then a break in the second half where he skinned Michael Rhodes, kind of stepped in and then just went outside him. That was awesome. But I felt like he didn't get the ball enough. And that's probably because of the way that Saracens defend, with the outside man shooting up to close off the channel outside 13. And it prevented, all bar those two opportunities, prevented Christian Wade getting much ball at all.
It does make me think, when I think of the final, that's kind of where, that's what Rassing brought, that maybe Dan Carter's Rassing brought, that maybe Leicester hadn't encountered regularly, is that aggressive. Like, and they had Mark Massoi particularly just flying up, smashing people.
Yeah, well, you... I do actually think that contributed to the number of knock-ons from Leicester, going back to that game just for a second, because Leicester were almost as if they had one eye on the defence coming up, because in the first 5-10 minutes there were so many big hits man and ball. So
it really was.
But actually, the big hits in the aggressive defence on Saracens v Dan Carter's Rassing is going to be pretty explosive.
Yeah. Collisions all over the place. It'd be awesome.
I actually think that Saracens are going to smash Rassing. Hear me now, believe you later. I've got a very, very good feeling about it.
Did you see the 15 documentary on BT Sport of the New York trip? We went out to watch that London Irish Saracens game. There's a half-hour documentary, behind-the-scenes stuff.
Yeah, unfortunately, they don't put it on the app. So on the BT Sports app, it isn't rerun.
Well, they have done some reruns of it. So look for it on your schedules. And if you get the chance to have a watch of it, then have a watch of it. Because I loved it. And you saw some behind the scenes of both teams, you know, London Irish scrapping for their lives, Saracens wanting to cement a top spot or in the league and playing that league game. But what came across more than anything was the Saracens' culture and attitude. There's a couple of phrases that I noticed and I've written down from it that I read. There was one phrase where Alistair Hargreaves said, when we knew we were coming to New York, we said straight away, no one is left behind. So they didn't take a match day squad and some reserves. They said, one goes, we all go. And the thing he said straight after that, it was one of the coaches said, Saracens, we believe making memories together off the pitch is as important as winning trophies together on the pitch.
Okay. So, all right, that's interesting. So on two fronts. Firstly, it's very clear Alistair Hargreaves does not run the accountancy side of Saracens. Because if he did, he would never be making those statements. And secondly, I can't imagine... this is like some horrible infection which has got into rugby recently, where we've got to talk about... memories on and off the field. No, nonsense. You'll only get those memories if you win things. I was talking to one of the England coaches yesterday.
No, but I'll flip that round quickly and say, will you only win things if you have those memories together?
No, sorry.
Because what I would argue is, I looked at it, and we've talked about pre-season before and what a uniting force that is. When you go through that hardship, and that togetherness is what gets you through those really dark places you find yourself in games with 10 minutes to go when you're behind.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. I kind of just disagree. I mean, you know, if you stick together and get relegated, you still have great memories. There's nowhere near as important as actually winning
games. I bet if you talk to any team that gets relegated, you will, and you talk to people off the record in a quiet corner in a pub and say, what was the atmosphere like? You say, well, it was a bit of bitching. And there was a bit of backstabbing going on. That group didn't get on with that group.
Yeah, I completely agree. I just think it's very easy to say these sort of airy fairy things when you're winning. I was talking to someone involved in the England 16 setup yesterday, and all I heard is just, oh, we're going to have a very proactive approach going forward, educational based. I don't know what that means. I don't know what any of this stuff means.
Culture.
Making memories on a field. It sounds like the right thing to say, but there's no substance behind it.
What he basically meant was, we're going to New York. We're all going to go out on the piss. We're going to get out on the pull. We're going to have a wild week, and we're going to win a rugby game. And we want everyone to be part of that.
Why didn't they just say that? I understand that. Everyone understands it. We don't have to hide it behind nonsense.
Can I? Just quickly, seeing as I've just mentioned that, have you seen the little excerpts from Stephen Ferris's autobiography?
No.
Oh my God, they're amazing.
You know what? I've been thinking that we should have like a podcast book club where we have to read a autobiography every week. And then give
one
like
a maybe not every week, maybe no, one a month. One a month to give other like people a chance to do
book
it.
Reports.
Well, I bought you that.
And I read it. It's very good.
Give us a book report.
I've still got that Austin Healey one, actually.
Yeah.
Right, you keep talking about stuff. I'm going to find this Stephen Ferris thing because it's brilliant.
What would you like me to talk about, Tim?
Well, the Saracens Wasps game.
I only saw like the last 13 minutes, and most of that was taken up by replays of Simon McIntyre, who did nothing wrong and is an exceptional player. I will not hear a bad word said about former
Broughton Park Simon McIntyre.
Well, wherever he's from, I'm just saying he's a very classy player, and he would never do something like that intentionally.
Great bloke, great
scrummager.
He didn't have the best 10 minutes when he came on. I don't think he was even on for 10
Do you know
minutes.
The funniest thing about Simon McIntyre?
Go on.
Claims he's got a 36-inch waist. I watched him yesterday. That man has not got a 36-inch waist.
He doesn't have a 36.
He's only got a 36-inch chest as well, Jay.
He's got an enormous chest.
He's got the biggest 52-inch barrel.
There's no way he's got a 36-inch.
What else do I know about Sam McIntyre? Sam McIntyre has straight A's at A-level.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Good lad.
And that's where my Sam McIntyre knowledge really runs out, actually.
He didn't have the best game.
No,
yesterday.
From what I understood, he came on, he gave away a penalty at scrum time.
Yeah.
Gave away a penalty immediately after doing something else.
Well, he took Goud out after Goud had kicked the ball. He didn't actually give away a penalty for that, but I think it should have been a penalty. It was a bit silly. And then there was the incident.
Yeah, which is laughable, right? Because there is no way that the referee was coming back to give a penalty against a Todgy.
No.
That just wasn't going to happen.
No. It was only the TMO that got it back there because of the kick.
So, when I turned it on, they were literally going through that kick. Were they playing on and the TMO highlighted it to the ref to come back?
No, there'd been a break in play. Was it when Duncan Taylor knocked on? So Saracens had the line at their mercy. Duncan Taylor knocked on, so it was a stoppage in play, and the TMO said, I think you need to check this.
Little snitch, little dry snitch.
Do we want to get into that, or do we want to stay on the game for a minute?
No, let's get into it. The game wasn't actually that good.
There were some very exciting parts of the game, but overall, it was a better game than Tigers, but it did feel a bit tense at times.
Yeah,
I thought the last few minutes where Wasps were trying to come back into it was awesome. Mm. But I do think that Saracens did what they do most of the time, which is they conceded the first points, they analysed. And then they just stifled the life out of Wasps.
They just destroyed. They are an incredible, incredible team.
They didn't give him any opportunities to, after that first one, to get back into it. And they did very, like, Saracens were probably on balance deserved winners.
Found the short Stephen Ferris thing.
So
he's got an autobiography, and he tells the story of the 2011 World Cup. He and Sean O'Brien were out on a night in New Plymouth. and which is quite a very, very small backwater town. And they met some American through a mutual friend. They met some American girls and they were trying to entice them back to the team hotel. And he says, New Plymouth is not the type of place where you can walk out and get a taxi. They're in short supply. When Sean and I go to leave with the American girls for company, we have no luck getting one. We've only had a few beers and we have our wits about us. We have a massive game against Australia the following week. We eventually flag a taxi down and go back to the hotel.
With company.
Yeah. I send a text to my roommate. Rog, I've got a girl back. Any chance of you effing off? He texts back, no worries, mate. He gets his bag and moves out of there pretty quickly, texting Dricko, Brian O'Driscoll, big man's got a girl back. Any chance I can bunk with you? Dricko and Rog sleep in the same bed. Next day, I buy him lunch.
Nice.
So it goes on, but it sounds like Stephen Ferris's autobiography could be good crack.
Yes, I might well read that. I think I quite enjoy this.
50 Shades of Stephen Ferris is available now.
Very very good.
Come on then, let's get on the elephant in the room. Now, I'll tell you what, let's have some light relief. You've got a game of rugby social.
Okay.
We're going to deal with the elephant in the room, which is Pro 12 and its potential changes, which is the discipline issues that have been around, and then we'll look ahead as well and talk about the other semi-finals.
We also need to talk about Statbacker and some
tickets. Oh, yes. And we need to talk about the cornerstone of our podcast.
Of course. Jonathan Bidmore.
Thank you. Yeah. So what are we doing first? Rugby Social?
Yeah, Rugby Social.
Rugby Social.
Hold there, I'll get the game show controls up.
Oh, amazing. So Rugby Social is a game where, rugby players, they do love to get onto social media and tweet about stuff. So Phil, presumably you've selected some interesting things that people have tweeted in the rugby fraternity.
Three tweets from three famous rugby players.
Go on.
Okay.
So can't hear anything, Jay.
So first one.
Hold on, you're getting your music.
I am. Hang on a second.
Here we go.
Yay! Thank you.
Thank you, your host, Philip Largan.
You're too kind.
Fire away then, Phil.
Okay. Alex Waller, Northampton loose head prop, is a dab hand at carpentry. What did he make this week for his front row companion, Kieran Brooks? Was it a fence for him to pen his chickens in? Was it a coffee table to place his artisan coffees onto? Or was it a picture frame for him to display pictures from his SLR camera?
It's for Kieran Brooks, right?
It's for Kieran Brooks.
Okay, I know what...
giant silver back of a man.
I can imagine...
Go on.
No. Do you want to go first? I'll go first.
Go on, then you go first.
I'm going to say... Kieran Brooks keeps chickens.
I was just thinking, he's a great big silverback of a man. I can imagine him having an 8 egg white omelette for breakfast, so I'm going chickens.
Chickens from both of you is incorrect.
Oh, so it's the last one.
It's a coffee table.
It's a coffee table. Should have known better, rugby players. I thought it was too obvious because rugby players and coffee shops.
There's a little picture of it.
It's very good,
Seems like a dab hand at carpentry.
It does.
And he says... when Kieran Brooks needs a coffee table, you build the big man a big coffee table.
Exactly right.
Damn right. Alex, we've got a big space in the rugby dungeon. We'd love to put our artisan coffees on.
Maybe we'll fire him a quick message on Twitter.
That's a good idea.
We could get it signed by loads of different rugby players who come and
just Northampton team will do.
Northampton team, get it. Anyway.
Go on, fire away.
Okay, question number two. Mike Phillips received a present from...
Girls. The answer's girls.
A present from a company this
week. An all-clear test.
It was neither of those things, surprisingly. But was it a DVD compilation of all his professional rugby tries? Was it 100 pairs of Jeff Banks underpants from Debenhams? Or was it a miniature caricature model of him... with a sheep?
Oh, wow.
I think it might be a miniature caricature of him with a sheep, because all the Welsh players have those little...
Yeah, those big head gnome type things are quite good. Yeah. Well, I'll just go for the Debenhams one because I want to be different. I probably would have sided with the miniature, but I'll go with Deb because I know he's just recently become the Debenhams, face of Debenhams, which is why I think Phil's he's a
great signing by
model.
Debenhams.
Great signing by Debenhams.
He is the face of Debenhams.
Uh-huh.
But it wasn't the underpants.
Nah.
And it wasn't the DVD compilation of all his tries. So
it was. Well done.
What a guy.
It was a little model of him.
So
you'd love that, wouldn't you, Jay? Look at that. You'd love that.
One point for me. Really? Oh, let's have a look. Oh, perfect.
There you go. Finally.
Just like our listeners will be saying. Are we?
Tommy Bowe.
Yep.
To celebrate his return to action and his two tries last week.
Girls' night out.
Has bought himself a car.
Okay.
Now, is it a green convertible original VW Beetle?
No, not having that.
Is it a 20-year-old yellow Lamborghini Countach?
Not having that one.
Or Countach. Or is it a blacked-out, pimped-up Land Rover Defender?
That one. That is happening. I'm saying Land Rover Defender. Tim?
That would have been my guess as well, but again, I need to be contrary to try and equalise things, so I'm going to go for the V-dub. Just maybe he's a slight hipster. When he wears some clothes, he's sort of he likes. No, he's not a hipster. But
does
anyway.
He not own a range of shoes?
He does clothing and shoe range.
That is right. Yeah,
That goes with a Defender far more than a V dub. But I'll go for the V dub.
Go for a Countach.
I'll go for a Countach. Yellow Countach.
Far away.
Defender.
Go on.
Is incorrect. The Countach. Is incorrect.
Yes, damn it.
And here's a picture of it. It is a green convertible original VW Beetle.
Beautiful.
So JB wins.
Good game of rugby social.
Thanks, Jay.
Well, that was good, Phil. I enjoyed that. No, I did. That was sounded sarcastic. I meant it. That was rugby social.
Cheers, Tim. Cheers, Tim.
Right. So, on the matter of discipline,
yes.
Fergus McFadden, following on from our extensive chat last week, got a 3-week ban for the tackle we talked about. Which says it merits a red card. Me and Andy Good were the only people on the same page, evidently. Well, there were other people as well, saying that it was a hard and fair tackle. The sighting commissioners and you two soft lads felt it was worthy of a red card and 3-week ban. I forget the guy's name, but the Oyonnax player was banned for 15 months for mouthing off at a ref, which I'm applauding.
Wow.
Well, he mouthed off at the time, and Romain Poit showed him a yellow card. He had a word on the pitch. Romain Poit showed him a red card for that. And then he didn't leave the pitch in a hurry, and he kept mouthing off and gesticulating and stuff. And then when Romain Poit left the field afterwards, he had to be held back from trying to shout at him. So
I'm okay with that.
15-month ban. And an Argentine player this week was banned for 29 years for a brutal, full-blooded...
I've not seen this.
You don't want to see it. A brutal, full-blooded kick to the face. You'd have justifiably said he could have been in court for GBH for that. It was horrendous.
Definitely. We had a guy in Colman Bay who hit a player from London, didn't know, and that went to court. In fact, these pitch fights, I haven't heard of one recently, but it seems to be like a stage 5 years ago, or maybe 10 years ago, where a lot of them were going to court. I think Greening went to court for a trip on Rougerie.
Kevin Yates for a bite, ear bite.
I'm not sure. Did Kevin Yates go to court?
I don't know.
I don't think
he had a very long ban, didn't he?
I'm not sure he was guilty on that. Was he? Or was he?
I'm not sure. I don't know.
I thought he was accused of it,
but. Yeah. The interesting, weird thing about the Argentinian one, I believe it was premeditated. There was something something previously had happened between the two, and so that has kind of been taken into account.
Oh, wow.
With the ban, yeah.
So it wasn't even a heat of the moment thing?
No.
God, that is horrible. That's horrible. Right, we're going to get on to the ones from this weekend, but so let me just remind you. So Phil's managed to organise it for you, so you could potentially win tickets to the Aviva Premiership final. We'll give you details on that before the end of this podcast. Do not stop listening before the end of the podcast, because you will hear how you could be at the Aviva Premiership final. And we're going to be talking about Pro 12 and next weekend's matches and running through the semi-finals. But I reckon we should, before we get into this, you know, we need to sharpen something. I was thinking sharpen the laws.
Our
I don't
wits.
Know. Sharpen our wits. We need to sharpen our wits before we talk about this in the way that Cornerstone have sharpened their award-winning razors.
Very good.
Exactly right.
Which could be yours. So, yeah, again, lots and lots of people through the week have got in touch and said, I've given Cornerstone a guy and a go, and I haven't looked back. And so, yeah, Cornerstone have an award-winning, according to the GQ judges, better than Wilkinson Sword, better than Gillette. And you won't be disappointed if you try them. They're a mail-order razor company that you can get a £10 discount off your first order. And I think even for an order of as little as £4, you can get a free engraved and precision-engineered shaft to go along with your razor blades.
Exactly. So something else rather interesting about Cornerstone.
What's that?
And they probably won't do it, but still. You get like a little kind of magazine thing when it arrives. It's got, you know, blokey things like five best steaks or have you. Watch out, because there might be a little 600-word piece article in there from the Egg Chasers next time around. So...
Entitled Let the Boys Play?
Let the Boys Play.
Yeah. Safely and responsibly.
I say let the boys shave. Get on this Cornerstone bandwagon. People are loving it and people are getting in touch with us all the time to say how good it is. Try it for very little cost, and if you don't like it, you can just cancel it. Get your free precision engineered shaft and then give it a go. cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. That's cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers for £10 off, or use the code EGG10 at checkout. So... following on from that brutal Argentine player and that kick, let's talk about two kicks that happened over the weekend. Now, okay. I don't think we should go and repeat the way that we talked about the Fergus McFadden thing last week.
No.
So let's be a bit briefer with this one. So firstly, yes. Joe Marler's shin to the head of a Grenoble player, not spotted at the time.
Nope.
Conor O'Shea's view is it doesn't pass the test for a red card, and therefore Joe Marler should not be cited. At this point, we don't know. The time hasn't run out on the possible citing. Conor O'Shea acknowledged it was silly and is inviting criticism, but nothing for the citing panel to flag up. Mm-hmm. Versus some people on Twitter and stuff, Robert McKinnon, for example, saying red card with 5 exclamation marks, no question, no mitigation, no excuse, a lengthy ban, 8 exclamation marks.
Well, I don't know. I mean, kicks the head is red. That is basically what it is.
Is that what you see Joe Marler did? Kick to the head?
In the head.
Did he now, kick someone in the
I
head?
I would like to see him red because he didn't... You know, if you're going to do it, you know, but don't... I mean, what?
Yeah, red card for...
Because it's not tough enough.
Kicking him hard enough.
It's a really strange one. It's just petulant and stupid. I mean, he should be hauled up in front of a disciplinary panel just for being stupid. On the other hand, I think this is Joe Marler making a real play for the England captaincy. I mean, he started off with a bit of racism, and now he's going for kicks to the head.
Yeah,
I mean,
he needs to accumulate a lot more, like...
But he's on the right path. We can all agree on that.
Months worth of bans to get the
Dylan Hartley's been banned for a whole year's worth of rugby. Joe Marler's got some work to do yet.
But, yeah, you know, fair play to the lad. He's definitely doing the right things, and he has to be applauded for it.
Right. my thoughts on this one, if I was the referee, I would have gone over to the Grenoble player and said, or a sighting person, don't appeal, sunshine. That's not washing with me.
I'm not sure he did that. He put his
hand to his face.
He was incredulous. What was that? Who is this clown?
To Joe Marler, I would just say, I would pull him aside and go, Joe, that was cheap, that was petty. And that's that. I could accept, Joe, that was a cheap shot. There was absolutely no need. It was, you know, go and calm down for 10 minutes. Go and have a think for 10 minutes and sit on the naughty step, yellow card. But I can't... I'm with Conor O'Shea, basically.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's get...
It's not red card worthy.
I mean, firstly, the French prop is just confused rather than anything else.
Yeah, fair enough.
He plays in France. He's used to being gouged and stamped. He's like, who is this guy?
Do it properly if you're going to do it.
Exactly right. I actually don't think your solution's too bad. Joe, that was petty. You look a bit silly. 10 minutes in the bin. That to me would be perfect.
It didn't get spotted at the time. So on that basis, I'm just saying contact was made between Joe Marler's shin and the guy's head, but I would not say there was nearly enough force or contact to say that was a letter of the law 10.4D classic. We have to classify that as a kick to the head.
If the referee did
red
say
card for weeks,
and he did give a red card, I'd be perfectly fine with that though. It's just kind of one of those flexible situations.
The problem as well, if you're saying, my opinion, it should be a red because it is a kick to head. He's struck out with his lower leg.
Struck out is an emotive word.
Well, no, he has swung his leg, and part of his lower leg.
He has moved his leg towards.
Right, but
he hasn't swung or struck.
He has swung his leg towards.
He's kicked someone in the head.
He has not kicked someone in the head.
Right, Tim. He has kicked someone in the head.
His shin made contact with the guy's head.
Because
he moved his shin towards his head, yes.
And the shin is worse than the actual force.
Oh, come on.
If you want to train someone to kick someone else
force.
In the head...
There was no force in that.
He nudged him. That is a huge problem I have a huge problem if you say, well, it's not really a kick because there wasn't enough force applied.
Yeah.
You said before, force is mass times acceleration. So we know Joe Marler's foot weighs 10 kg. What was the acceleration? And what is the acceptable acceleration for you? Would you say 10 meters per second squared is an acceleration?
I understand what you're saying, but I have an I understand what you're saying, but I have an equal problem with saying any contact. And same with Simon McIntyre. Any contact with a leg and a head means you use the term that is a kick, and you treat them all the same.
But it's not
but starting
contact.
From a minimum but 4 weeks.
It's not any contact. You have to kick. You have to swing your foot at someone's head in order to kick them in the head.
All right. Well, that's
Let's just put it this way. Marler's was worse than McIntyre's because he just gets up and he kicks someone in a petulant manner.
I agree with that. The petulant nature of it, means I'd actually go, you know what? That's definitely a yellow.
Quite like him to get a ban. Just for the petulant nature, because I'd like him to learn from that.
Yeah. The second thing is, if you're going to teach someone to kick to the head, you use the shin.
If you're actually going
into Thai boxing, you kick with the shin. And lastly, you're not even allowed to kick someone in the head in UFC on the floor. Now, I'm not saying Joe Marler should have waited for him to stand up
or
to kick him in the head.
Or that he kicked him.
I'm just saying that...
Oh, no, he definitely did kick him.
I don't think there's any dispute. There was definitely a kick there.
Okay.
Now, how serious the kick is...
Yeah, not serious.
I mean, well, the World Rugby Guidelines, so it says kicking your opponent is minimum penalty and then up to... Well, it's a maximum of 52-week ban is the way that they've described it, with the low end of a bannable offence being a 4-week penalty. That, for me, is the low end of a bannable offence, but it is a bannable offence. And the force... should only come into account with the actual ban. It shouldn't come into account
with the head as well. I mean, we've got a real problem with head head injuries. I mean, people just need to learn, leave the head alone. It is so stupid. Kick him in the ribs. That'd be fine.
Stand on his hand if you want to be petulant.
Okay, then. Well, do you know what? Let's follow this. Let's take that, Jay. You've just said. We've got a thing with the head, and you know, you make contact with the head, and it's got to be a red card. It's just got to be. So you tell me.
No, I didn't say.
Well,
that.
I'd
understand if it was.
You'd understand. Okay, fine. I mean, you'd understand if it was fine.
Yeah, I mean, in my world,
fine.
I'd be bringing back rugby fights.
So what? Yeah, I would. So what do you think, Jay? What do you forget? What you would accept or what you'd understand? What do you think? If you were the referee, what would you do?
I quite like your initial suggestion. Lads, calm down. Yellow card for being a bit of a dick, and that'd be it.
I don't have a huge problem with that.
Yeah, but I completely understand why it would be red. Now, I wouldn't want it to go to citing just because of the sheer costs of rolling out a judge, creating a legal team.
Okay, but that's what's going to if he gets 40 banned, that's what will happen.
That is ridiculous.
So you don't think it should go to a citing panel?
No, no, no.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine then. All right. Well, we're on the same page. I could understand. We could have a debate about.
I think the citing panels are some of the most stupid things I've ever heard of. Can you remember Sean O'Brien? I mean, if you get instant pitch justice and a red, well, it's over, right? But Sean O'Brien had a full legal defence team, like an 8-page statement, and they had to wheel out a judge, a full-on judge. Shouldn't they be solving murders or something
fine.
Like that?
I thought you were saying he should be cited and should get a 4-week ban.
No.
So I would go for a 4-week ban. Even if it's only to say, Joe, this was your first game back from being banned. Don't be so stupid.
So are you saying that if it's not someone that's just come back from another ban, then you shouldn't cite them?
No, I'm saying
you'd cite them anyway.
I'm saying kick to the head should be a red card. Yeah. I think it's pretty.
So what about Simon McIntyre? Let's go on to that quickly.
Yeah, for me,
same basis.
It's a red card.
Red card. So it should be upgraded from the yellow that he got on the field, and he should get a 4-week ban.
Okay, and I also think that Mario Todgi should have got a yellow card because that is a cynical professional foul.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that whole holding people in rooks, you see it all the time. That needs to be stopped.
Here's the question for me, right? He kicked him in the head. He definitely kicks the head. Why didn't he use his studs and just stamp all over his fingers? He wouldn't have got carded and he could potentially have damaged some fingers. I mean, that is so much...
I think it's so much better. If someone was holding... Right, so you see this sometimes, and I don't think this goes unpunished. You see people holding on to you in a... In fact, what do you do? You're trying to get out of a mall, and someone's holding you in.
I know what you do. I've seen you do it.
What do you do?
I hit the hand.
Yeah, I hit the arm.
Yeah.
To get them off my to stop them from holding on to me.
You hit the arm.
So are you saying that, Phil? Are you saying that's a red card as well?
No, it's not hitting someone in the head, is it?
but I would say force downwards with the force that I would hit someone to get rid of my arm and the way people do it.
You're hitting him in the arm,
middle of the arm, whacking down. I'd say that was far more severe than the nudge that Simon McIntyre gives his head. He nudges him.
You can hit the arm if someone's holding onto you. You can't kick someone in the head.
I think that
for me is pretty clear cut.
I think Sai should have been stamping all over his hands personally.
Yeah, yeah.
If he stamps on that.
Stamps on his finger.
Yeah,
that's okay.
Fine. That's fine.
Stamping on any joint is an instant red card. According to World Rugby.
So you follow
your letter of the law.
Okay,
thing, and
if you want to follow your letter of the law, we'll go for a red card for that.
He stamps on his hand, which is near the wrist. That's stamping on a joint, red card.
I think they'd be...
And a much longer ban, because it's a stamp.
No, I think it'd be the same.
Don't get me wrong. Look, if there's kids listening to this, I'm not saying stamp on hands. I'm saying in Simon's case, he should have been... Just a bit wiser, but just don't kick anyone in the head.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a fairly straightforward rule to live your life by, I guess.
Yeah,
just don't kick people in the head, and these things will never happen.
No matter how soft you think you're kicking someone in the head,
you're still kicking someone in the head.
Oh yeah, okay, fair enough.
Even if it's just a gentle, loving, affectionate kick.
Joe Marler's was a bit cheaper. Because it wasn't like... I think Simon McIntyre was like, hold on, I'm hopping around. Get off. Like, nudge. Like, the way you'd sort of... If someone was...
Yeah.
All over you, just kind of like... Yeah. You can't see what I'm doing on the podcast, but I'm just going, oh, come on, get off. That's all he was doing. So I kind of think a little... Here's what I think about what you've just said and the whole area. We are sort of saying we've got these massive beast-like men who are having physical confrontations all the time. And effectively, taking away... these little areas and making them black and white, making all these grey areas black and white, and bringing in laws that make it black and white is like caging a wild animal.
It is a very weird thing that we do, isn't it? That the only law, like the law that applies to rugby, is almost parallel to the law that we apply to the criminal justice system, and it shouldn't be like that. There should be some. I agree with you. There should be a bit more kind of grey in it.
There are so many grey areas in rugby that I think some things like kicking someone in the head should just be black and white. That is yes, no.
Yes.
When we were WhatsApping and chatting before, and I was stood watching my 8-year-old lad play mini rugby today, and I was back and forth in on WhatsApp with Phil, and I brought up one thing, and I went, and I really mean this, and I'd be interested to know, because you've been playing this season at a lower level. I can't remember the last time in senior top level rugby that I saw a referee say, captains, two captains come here, and I want you two players that have just been having a fight or like Mario Itoje and Simon McIntyre. I can't remember the last time I've seen him go, captains, Wasp 17 and Saracens 5.
Shake hands.
Come here now. Right, boys. What are you doing? Play rugby. Shake hands. No more. Get on with it. I can't remember the last time that happened in a top flight game. That used to happen every week, all the time.
Devastated to know it happened. Chiefs versus...
No, I'm not devastated. I'm delighted if that still happened.
That does happen.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last game I've watched
where that happened.
The thing is, it very rarely happens for punches anymore. Because there's very few punches.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last...
A punch is such an escalation, though.
Yeah, I can't remember the last punch I've
seen.
It's a shame. You frequently get the scuffle.
Because now it's the TMOs going, yes, there was contact between shin and head. Yes, so that's a kick, 4 weeks, red card. I always imagined my Nigel Owens voice. I would have dealt with the Simon McIntyre, Maro Itoje. I'd have gone, Maro, right, you're a clever boy. You do poetry. You do politics. Right, you're clever enough to know you don't hold someone in a ruck. I want no more of that, or I'd deal with it. All right, back you go. Right, Simon, you don't take the law into your own hands. I am the referee. You're on thin ice, boy. Now, shake hands. Back. Oh, I've already said, Maro, come back. Shake hands. Now, get on with it. Let's play rugby.
And I'm interested to know, what would Jonathan Spratt be saying in the distance?
Forward!
Now, if Simon McIntyre kicked him anywhere else apart from the head, I'd be very happy with that. Yeah. I'd be very happy with that situation.
Just can't kick heads.
It's the head.
Just don't kick heads.
I do have a big issue with that.
Yeah, okay.
What's the important thing I was just
While you're thinking about it, we ran a poll today on Twitter before we came on air, and saying, Simon McIntyre as a case study, what do you... he got given a yellow card. What would you have done? The option...
Oh, sorry.
The
option, final point. There should be an offence of inciting a player to be violent. Okay, so if they're whining,
let's add another law.
Well, a todgy professional foul.
Yeah,
McIntyre shouldn't be the only one to get penalised, and it's laughable to think that they were going to come back for the penalty. They clearly weren't. So a todgy should definitely have been carded. In fact, two yellows would have been the ideal, really.
Like, two yellows I would have been happy with, actually.
Because if you're saying, like, don't throw punches, well, don't do the thing to make the player...
Both of you shake hands and get on with it and play rugby, you're both better than that. Or both of you, go and take 10 minutes and have a think and stop farting around. Get off my pitch.
Yeah, I'd be
very happy with a todgy yellow card for that.
So the... But you say there's no other option but a McIntyre red.
For a kick to the head, right, I think you have to be pretty clear
on that.
Red
and yellow would be...
Well, we got,
red and yellow would be nailed on.
We got 400 votes to a poll, so it's a reasonable sample size. Over a couple of hours, we ran a poll today before the podcast. Simon McIntyre's got a yellow card during Saracen's Wasp. What would you do? Options, red card, yellow card, penalty, or have a word with both players. The one that got the most votes, 34%, so not a majority, was have a word with both players. So it seems like there's quite a lot of people sort of falling in similar mindset to me.
Now, I put that partly down to the fact that there was no option for red card, yellow card, or yellow card, yellow card, or there was nothing to give. That was the only option.
You only have four options on Twitter.
Yeah, I know, but that one was the only option which penalised Itoji.
So... But you think that would skew people going there? McIntyre shouldn't have gotten anything.
I think if you'd have had the option of red card, yellow card, yellow card, yellow card, then those two would have been much higher than this one.
Well, in any case, a red and a yellow for Simon McIntyre alone.
Yeah,
34% of people said, and the highest individual classification was the ref should have a word with both players. But in this. If this was politics, the red card and the yellow card parties would be forming a coalition, 54% with a working majority. Would have got Simon McIntyre off the pitch for at least 10. They probably compromised and said, you're off for 20 minutes.
Yeah. Well, there's only 12 minutes gone, so you might just see the game out, Si.
There you go. Okay. Anyway.
Okay, so should we talk very briefly about Pro 12 again and Shane Williams? Was it Shane Williams?
Yes,
Shane Williams. Yeah.
So we got some games. We've got some big games coming up to talk about in terms of the Pro 12. But this week, in a rest week, and while none of the Pro 12 teams are involved in any meaningful games because they're not in European competition,
or playing Pro 12.
Well, Dragons were, but anyway.
Yeah, Dragons.
Dragons were in a meaningful game.
Yeah, they're in a meaningful game,
I never really gave them a chance of winning that.
No. Shane Williams said that the Pro 12 needs an overhaul, and this is in addition to last week Jonathan Davies saying that he thinks the Italian teams should play in the French lower divisions and be out of the Challenge Cup.
Yep, right, so...
I can see the argument for doing that.
Yeah, look...
They're contributing nothing to the Challenge Cup.
So we have a Pro 10.
I'd be fine with that. Cup. Now, here's the thing about the Pro 12. Everyone thinks I hate the Pro 12. You're not far wrong.
And you're Welsh.
Yeah, I do genuinely.
Let me just deal with this. You think I hate the Pro 12? I just need to deal with this. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you probably. So the Italian teams had absolutely nothing. No one enjoys going. Oh, they might enjoy going there, but you know, I don't think the fans go. There's
five points, nice weather. Yeah.
It's probably cheaper to get, like in the international rugby time anyway, it's probably cheaper to fly to Rome and go to the rugby in Rome than it is to drive to Twickenham and go to Twickenham.
Now, the real shame of the Pro 12 is it actually could be a good competition. And there are some real shining beacons of excellent rugby out there. I think the Irish teams are about as professional, as well organised as any team, any rugby team, or even professional sports team that there is. Munster, Leinster, Ulster, fantastic.
Well, you'd have to question Munster this year, but
the structures are right, the
long
crowds are right,
generally,
all that is absolutely fine. And they've kind of just put it all in this mixing pot with some Italian teams, and it just doesn't work. Now, where I have the real problem with the Pro 12 is a sense of entitlement from all the other teams. The Welsh teams are the worst for this, but there is a bit of it in Ireland, which is, oh, well, we're not doing well because we don't have the players. Oh, we need more international players. Oh, it's not, you know, it's everyone else's fault except for their fault for not coaching good rugby and not playing good rugby, which is why Connacht are such a great team, because they don't whinge about not having players. They get the players that they have, and onwards they march. They play great rugby. Glasgow did exactly the same thing two years ago. So there are shining beacons of excellence in the Pro 12, but it's just everything else. It just feels also politically driven. The qualification for Europe until recently was an absolute joke. The fact that you've got three perennial teams which are just awful in Dragons... and the two
European Challenge Cup semi-finalist Dragons, but
currently third bottom.
Are you actually going to sit there and give me an argument why the Dragons are any good to watch or any use to anyone?
They defended gallantly.
Yeah, they did
yesterday.
They
on
did.
Saturday.
They did.
But yeah, they've.
I mean, so
they're not playing particularly well.
Yeah,
trying to look at like positives and going forward and stuff.
Well, the positives are the Irish provinces. The positives are the great rugby that's played up in Glasgow. Yeah, absolutely right. And Connacht. Sometimes the Welsh regions look like they're getting it together, but then it all falls tragically apart again.
There is that transitional period that Phil's been talking about for quite a while, adjusting to the new qualification for Europe.
What is Pro 12, like 15 years old? Like Celtic?
No. The new qualification for Europe, which means that now you can't have those, we've got a big European game coming up, so let's rest our guys in the... in the Pro 12 for the next 2 weeks, which is what they used to do.
That is better.
And disproportionately, because there's fewer teams per country, they are hit harder, relatively speaking, than Aviva Premiership sides from just losing so many international players.
Yeah. Glasgow and Leinster lose like 17 internationals.
Yeah. But they're all stupid for this, right? Because you can't have it both ways. You can't say, we want all the internationals and then whinge when all the internationals are taken.
But here's the thing. So if I was thinking about Jonathan Davies' suggestion, and I was thinking, right, imagine if the Italian teams did join a lower French division and could work their way up and get it on merit and all the rest of it. They would have less travelling. It might be more attractive. You might be able to generate crowds and stuff because there's a lot of teams in southern France near where they play. Yeah, right, so that's good.
That is good. That's possible.
You can build some rivalries. No one has a rivalry with Zebra.
Exactly. So and then it would be the Pro 10, which would cut down the number of games by four. Mm-hmm. You could schedule that in a season so that you protect around the Six Nations much more so that you don't need to have Pro 12 rugby going on close to the Six Nations, so that you mean one of your problems, which is that you have a lot of games where the frontline players don't turn up, and that means that fans don't want to come and watch. That would be avoided. So
that from an England fan's perspective, is actually a negative thing for England, because it means that Welsh, Scottish and Irish teams will have their availability to their players around the Six Nations.
The Pro 12 could be a wonderful competition, but it just needs to sort out its politics. But it's politics more than anything.
You say that, Phil, but I'd say that's quite short-sighted as an England fan, because yes, that means that we might face a stronger Welsh team who don't have their French players playing.
It'll be their home players.
Their home players
available.
So that might be better for that might be worse for England, but then in 4 years' time, are we going to have had as tough a test as we need to win a World Cup if we have it slightly easier at Six Nations?
Maybe not. It might have nothing to do with it.
But also,
if we lose the next three Six Nations,
I mean, also what the Pro 12 needs to do is stop obsessing about the international players. I think it's a really good thing that all these Welsh players disappear off out into English and French clubs and take their positions.
I can understand why, if you're a fan, that would mean you might go, do you know what, I'm just going to go to my local Welsh Premiership club rather than my Welsh region, because I feel like I have more connection to them. Whereas if they see the internationals that they see playing for Wales, you know, that's more attractive. Mm. And interestingly, as has been pointed out on Twitter to us, 60,000 tickets have been sold for some Welsh Pro 12 games.
In previous podcasts, the Pro 12 is improving. Okay, it's improving on every conceivable measure, from TV money to crowd appearances. Like, the top crowd appearances in the Pro 12 will rival the Aviva. So there is a core of really good rugby, but the rest of it, outside of that core, is absolute dross, and they need to address that very, very soon. And when I say that, I mean address the Italian teams and the lack of competition throughout the league.
It's interesting you talk about the attendances. Do you know what the average attendances are in the Pro 12 and how they do compare?
I think they're about 11,000, aren't they?
If you because you've got the Irish provinces, which are very well attended, it'll skew that higher, relatively speaking.
And also, like, the derbies are well attended.
Yeah, but that's all part of the season, isn't it?
So 11,000, 12,000?
No, not that high. About 6,000. So in the top three are kind of obviously Leinster, Ulster, Munster, which are the only three that average above 10,000. In the Premiership, there's only three that average under 10,000.
Which is must be Irish, Newcastle, Sale.
Saracens?
Irish, Newcastle, Sale.
Sale, Newcastle and Worcester. Irish are 12,000 average.
Are they?
Saracens are third top. And Premiership games, 19,500.
Because they have their Wembley. Wow.
Because, yes, their highest crowd is over 80,000 this year, so that brings their average up. And they've had a couple of those.
But 60,000 people turning out to see the Welsh Pro 12 teams, that's impressive. And there's lots of promising things. Quite a few people on Twitter were saying, the Welsh teams, these Welsh fans saying, the Welsh teams just need to join the Premiership. I just want to say, as an England fan, I don't want that. No thanks.
How do you manage it when you've got 18 teams in a league?
Have your own competition. Have your own thing. Have your own rivalries. Write your own history. Don't try and piggyback off someone else's. For the Welsh teams, and the Irish teams are guilty of this to a certain degree. Don't try and steal. Don't try and steal international players off your own rival provinces.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a thing. I mean, if you want to make it nice and competitive,
that was Robbie Henshaw's call. We're led to believe. So.
Yeah,
but I mean, if you want to keep it nice and competitive, you almost like need a draft style thing for these young players, because you've got complete control over them now because they won't play international.
But then, arguably, are you better having Leinster stronger so that they get to the Champions Cup final or the semi-final, so you've got 15 internationals all gaining experience of knockout rugby?
I'm afraid to say that that's very short-termism, because the key to having good rugby is a strong competition. And I think this year
Champions Cup's pretty strong competition.
The Champions Cup is, but the reason the English team's doing well now is because they've levelled the playing field somewhat with things like salary caps, allowing people to think of other things to do other than steal everyone else's players. They have to concentrate on playing good rugby. And that's what levelling the field
is. Sorry, go.
Just going back to your point, Tim, about the two Italian teams going to France, Tier 2, I think that would be a good fit. Another option, because dropping the Pro 12 to 10... I'm not sure is the best idea. You could merge those two teams and have one, or you could have a couple of the London Celtic teams,
London Exiles.
You could have RGC, or you could even merge the two Italian teams and then have one from further afield. Mm. A combination of a Georgian, Russian. Romanian team playing in the Pro 12.
An Eastern Bloc Pro 12 team.
Yeah, the Soviet.
The Soviet.
Something Hounds, Wolves.
Ice Wolves.
Sickle Wolves. Sickle Hammer Wolves.
Bears.
Hammers.
Ice Bears. Yeah.
Ice Bears.
Yeah, the Soviet Ice Bears. I like that.
I think we've solved that.
The Soviet oligarch.
Do you know what?
Ice Bears.
If I was Russia, okay. And I wanted to put a team in the Pro 12. And I think I could probably win it, actually. I would have, basically, I would take... Is it NSI? How do you say it?
NSI, yeah.
NSI.
And National Savings and Investments.
That's the one. I would use them as my team, because their home advantage would be massive. You've got to fly all the way over there, over God knows how many times.
Fly to Asia, practically.
Yeah. And then it is so cold.
And some, as in Georgia marks kind of the geographic boundary of Asia, and you're probably going for another 4 hours past that to get there.
Do you know all the tricks that teams used to play on each other, like, you know, you'd either have the heating too hot or too cold. Yeah. Well, I'd have the heating.
Pink changing rooms.
Yeah, pink changing rooms. I'd have no heating whatsoever. I'd have the taps like icy cold showers.
Yeah,
it'd just be the worst experience ever. The drive from the airport must be at least 6 hours.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's some Russian rules that you could get them doing manual labour from the moment they land on Russian soil.
Lots of roadblocks on the way there.
4 hours at customs visa check-in.
Definitely.
Yeah, there we go. That's a solution. Anyway, at Rugby Podcast, you can tell us yours. Now, before we go any further, we need to tell you how you could get to the Aviva Premiership Final with the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. Philip.
With the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast and statbacker.com, which is it's a very good website, very interesting website that's been set up recently. So it's weekly fantasy rugby website. The whole idea is you pick players based on how you think they're going to perform the following week at certain statistics. So 2 weeks ago, I picked who I thought was going to be the top try scorer in Super Rugby, or the seven top try scorers. And I won a Hurricanes jersey because of it.
Why didn't you go for Jaguares?
I went for a Jaguares.
I was going to say, obviously you picked a Jaguares shirt.
Unfortunately, Nike are not selling Jaguares jerseys outside of Argentina.
This is a scandal.
It's all right. I'll get onto Nike.
Yes, we need to get onto Nike.
I'm on it. I'm writing it down on my to-do list.
So how does this work, Tim?
I'll do it from my work email account. Yeah. Hi, it's Tim from Virgin Radio. Tell me more about this Nike Jaguares jersey.
Tim's calling. Stop everything.
So hopefully next week I'll be wearing.
Oh, sorry. Bear with me a moment. Oh, sorry. I just had to stop because I'm on email. That's not a phone call. I'll call them so I can say sorry. Was that Richard? Richard Branson just needed me for a second. Anyway, let's talk about that Jaguares shirt. Sorry, carry on.
Yes, three Jaguares shirts, medium, large, extra large, please.
Yeah.
So hopefully
JB might squeeze into a large. Yeah, getting into a large.
I tried on the Rob Short top the other day. It looked better than it originally did. That's it does look great.
So
yes,
statbacker.com.
Yes.
So what you need to do? Go on to statbacker.com. Say that again. Statbacker.com.
Statbacker.com.
And there is an Egg Chasers League where you have to pick who you think is going to be the top try scorer or the top try scorers, because I think you have to pick seven players for next week's Premiership action, which will run through the fixtures in a little while.
Thomas the Tank one.
Maybe give you some tips. Yeah, Christian Wade perhaps. Mm-hmm. So we'll run through that and give you some tips. And from that, the winner, the person whose players get the most tries, get two tickets to the Aviva Premiership Final, Saturday the 28th of May. And there will also be a further pair of tickets selected at random from everyone who enters.
So even entering with just no effort, just ticking any old seven, you've got a good chance of getting a pair of tickets. But if you really give it some thought, you could guarantee yourself a pair of tickets.
And the three of us will be entering, but we can't win, unfortunately, guys.
Well, I'll see about that.
Yeah.
You can top the league, Jay. But you can't get the tickets.
Well, you won't know.
I won't have the tickets, but I might be able to get a...
Well, you won't know that my pseudonym is Miles Benjamin.
It'd be very suspicious if Miles Benjamin wins the league.
Yeah, so we'll see.
All you need to do, www, three W's.
Well done, three W's, Phil. JB on his little Orbis Access advert. Go back and have a listen to that again at the start of the podcast. JB doesn't know how many W's are in www.
www.statbacker.com. Register on there and you will see the Egg Chasers League, which you can win one of two pairs of tickets to the Aviva Premiership Final. Even if you're rubbish, you've got a chance of winning a pair of tickets.
Good work, Phil. Good work. Well, let's rattle through those games then.
Good idea. Okay, Premiership, mm-hmm. Friday night. Have you seen the poster for this?
Yes.
I tweeted out.
The spoof shark Jaws poster.
Yes, there's a sale spoof of Jaws with a strap line. You're going to need a bigger pack. Because Gloucester travel to Sale on Friday night.
You need a bigger pack. Bigger pack? Well, I don't get that.
I don't think of Gloucester as being the biggest pack in the Premiership. They're pretty meaty, actually.
They're going to need a bigger pack.
Oh, so right.
Are going to need a bigger pack. Oh, God. A pun on the old Jaws tagline, you're going to need a bigger boat.
Yes. Which I'm glad you said it the right way around, because it's one of those often misquoted movie lines where people say it's, we're going to need a bigger boat. And he actually says, you're going to need a bigger boat. Boat. Oh, people always say it like that.
There you go. Yeah. I'd be devastated if
someone I'm working this game, by the way.
Oh, are you?
I'm working. I'm doing the reporting. So I don't know. So yeah, keep an eye out for my hand.
Tim, I've got a dare for you. I want you to paint your nails.
No chance.
No, let's. I'm going to
just
think,
one sneak in. Just one with a little pinky.
Go on, do so. I know. Why don't you get like our little podcast logo transfer on your nail?
Why don't you come and stand with me in the tunnel like you have done before at a sale?
I may well do. Yeah. I may well do.
Anyway,
I might be up for that.
Sale.
Oh, no, we can't, Jay. We're in Valencia.
Oh, yeah, you're away. Yeah. Sale let themselves down, didn't they? A little bit. Or Bath showed up well at the rec.
I think probably more Bath and Sale let themselves down. Sale have one speed, which is very, very good.
Not away.
Not away.
From what I've read, Sale didn't get off the bus.
They still got two bonus points, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yes, but it was the first half an hour that let them down.
Was it?
Yeah, so didn't travel well.
Which has left the door ajar for Quins and Quins to get back into the top six, potentially.
Or Northampton.
Quins
into top six.
Into the top six.
Leicester have got a couple of tricky games. They've got Bath away, and judging by Bath's performance and Leicester's performance this week, that isn't going to be straightforward.
And Sale have got...
Gloucester and...
Irish?
Yeah, I think Worcester or Leicester's other game as well.
Sale have got... Newcastle away,
that's it.
So, I mean...
But this is Sale's last home game, and if they win this game, they will have remained unbeaten against every Premiership team at the AJ Bell Stadium, which will be very impressive, and I think they'll be going all out to do that, not least to, you know, to keep themselves in the hunt for a top six, and I think they'll win.
Me too. Any try scorers to watch out for in that game?
Will Addison.
I'd go for Will Addison as well.
I will say Nev.
Nev. Oh yeah, Nev with his boyfriend to link up just before they split up. I wonder if Sippers will take Nev with him.
Nev signed a 2-year deal.
Nev signed a new deal.
Yeah. We're not going to do this podcast, but next podcast I'm going to dig up the Instagram post of Nev and Danny in the car.
Friends
for life.
Yeah. My best mate. He's my best mate. I like that.
I did.
Killing it. Best mate. Killing it. I loved it. I love that.
So masculine.
Next game,
Leicester.
Yeah, I'm glad we managed to talk about Sippers and not mention the news this week. Anyway, let's just keep that away. Anyway.
Leicester host Worcester.
Leicester
comfortably, because they have to. Worcester are I could quite understand if they all had, you know, their mind on the beach, to be honest.
Yep. Yes.
Dean Ryan won't let them do that, but Leicester will still win.
Yes, Leicester will win at home. Try scorers?
Beetham, Vianu,
yes.
Gonova.
Yes.
Put them all in.
Yes. And Francois Hugard, if you're going to look for a Worcester try scorer, but... Give me those Leicester outside backs.
Yeah, they have two clubs. This is the Miles
I reckon.
Benjamin Cup,
I reckon Thacker just hanging on the back of a driving maul against Worcester,
or just running around everyone,
scorching in from 50 yards.
Yeah, either or,
doesn't matter.
Miles Benjamin Cup.
it is Miles Benjamin Memorial Cup.
He's not dead. He's certainly alive in my heart.
Then Northampton host Bath. Northampton still with an outside chance of top four, although it's unlikely.
But they need to cement top six.
Yes.
So they'll win.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I would go with that. Try scorers?
North.
Is North injured or is he fit? I've not seen
he's
him
always
for,
fit.
I've not seen him for a little while.
He played last week.
Did he?
I'm sure he did. I've not seen... Yeah, George North is like one of the most active men in
all
the Premiership.
I'll go for Harry Malinder.
Oh, Malinder.
Okay. A rangy try.
Rocco Degouni has been scoring at will lately as well. So if Bath are going to score some tries, it's most likely through him. Sunday, 1 p.m. Exeter host Wasps.
Toot toot for the tries.
Repeat of the quarterfinal.
Just pick as many players from this team as you can.
This could be an absolute try fest.
Exeter for me, please.
I'm going to go Exeter at home.
Which with revenge.
So Wasps are currently in second place. So Exeter at home would make them leap from
It's important, this.
Very important.
Very important game.
Very important. Exeter have had a week off. Week of rest. They're at home. Give me Exeter.
I'm going for Exeter, and you would go 2-2, and I would not go James Short, who has shaved that beautiful, luxurious beard off. And just like when Jack Berger went, by Jack Berger's incredibly high standards, Jack Berger went a bit off the boil when he shaved his head.
Yeah.
Jamie Elliott hasn't scored in a bit, has he?
No, he hasn't. Irish Harlequins?
Yeah, Irish Quins. Gonna
I might be at this game as well.
Oh, really?
I don't know yet. I might be bobbing over to watch this one.
Interesting. In a work capacity?
Possibly, but I don't know yet. Anyway.
So, Irish are not officially relegated.
No.
And Harlequins, they've got top six to play for, yes. But they can't get... they could mathematically
they could.
Get top four, but...
But they'll be able to see what's sailed. But they'll have to name their team beforehand. I think the Quins are going to go all out to win it.
Yeah.
And Quins can be devastating on their day.
Yeah,
if it's their day, Quins will.
I'm going to say Irish. I'm going to say Irish.
You say Irish. If Irish get a 5-point win, it would put them 1 point behind Newcastle,
who got Saracens,
who travel to Saracens. Ugh. So Newcastle are getting no change from that game. So it's not over for Irish.
So it's the longest death of any team I've ever encountered. But yeah, okay. So maybe Irish gets something out of this. I doubt it. I'm going to go Harlequins.
Irish, come on, Irish. I mean, neutral, whatever. I think Irish with Alex Lewington.
Irish and Lewington or Maitland, both good players. Quins, if you're going to pick someone, I mean, Visser is on very good form. Mm. Jamie Roberts' try on Friday night was quite nice. It was from more
from
than
an
three
un,
yards.
From an uncharacteristic 6 metres, but then I think the next carry he did, he made no
minus
yards,
three.
So he just equalised it.
Just balanced it all out.
Right.
Then Saracens, Newcastle.
Saracens. Goode and Ashton.
Yeah, Ashton. Ashton would be a good one.
Pro 12 action, please.
Pro 12.
Eager
for this, Jay.
Just tell me who Connacht are playing and then we'll just wrap up the podcast.
Come on.
So in reverse order, Dragons host Scarlets on Saturday.
That'll
as part of the double header.
That'll be a good game. Double header, 60,000 fans.
Fine.
Ulster host Leinster.
Nice.
Which will be a good game because Ulster needs to secure top four.
Ulster.
Cardiff host Ospreys.
I'll go Ospreys.
Ospreys as well. Munster host Edinburgh.
I think
Munster.
Oh, Munster have been a bit
Munster.
Of a shambles, really, but I'll go for them at home.
Yeah, Munster at home.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Glasgow host Zebra.
It's a tough one to call that. I don't know. I'll come back to that. I'll have a think about that one. Keep an eye on at Rugby Podcast. We'll have a think long and hard about that fixture and let you know in due course.
As well as Treviso hosting Connacht.
Oh, so hard to pick.
Yes.
Connacht. And how? Tell me about Connacht in the actual league. How far ahead are they?
Well, they're not ahead.
No,
they're level.
They're level with Leinster, but they're currently in second place.
So Leinster have got Ulster.
I believe.
Ulster will hopefully beat Leinster, and Connacht will definitely do the business against one of the Italian teams.
Yeah, so Leinster need to win away at Ulster in order to try and secure a home semi-final. Ulster need to win in order to secure top four. So that's going to be a good game.
It will be. So that's out of Scarlets at fifth. So realistically, we're not looking at a Welsh team cracking the top four, are we?
Well, if Scarlets win and Ulster lose to Leinster, then it's back in Scarlets' hands.
Yep.
So it's not.
After the start they had, they've gone well off the boil, though.
Yeah.
So
now, Scarlets signing for next year this McNichol character who they've got from Chiefs. Now, I don't know if it's just because he's playing for Chiefs.
Oh, is that the winger?
Yes.
Oh, he's that incredible winger we were talking about the other week.
No, that's Damian McKenzie.
Oh, McKenzie. Yeah.
No, hang on. McNichol plays for Chiefs.
Is it McNichol from Chiefs?
I don't know. Have I got it completely wrong?
Maybe. Anyway.
Yeah, fine.
Anyway. What was your point?
Yeah, you are right. Now you say Crusaders.
Who have you someone reboot JB.
Someone completely irrelevant.
Right, okay, fine. Right, so that's that.
That's that.
Great, done.
Cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers to get involved in that and witness what everyone else is talking about. Statbacker.com. Go to the Egg Chasers League to win some Aviva Premiership final tickets. Get yourself to iTunes and Acast to subscribe. Leave us a review on iTunes. Find us on Twitter at Rugby Podcast and keep in touch with me turning more and more into JB. And JB, now he's had a child, growing a heart and turning more and more into me.
I just don't want people kicked in the head. I don't mind.
The occasional kick in the head.
And if you're going to kick it, do it properly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And then sit out.
Campaign for real kicks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Johnny McNichol, Crusaders winger.
So, but there is another McNichol who plays for Chiefs.
Is there?
Yes, I'm sure there is.
There's Damian McKenzie, who we've spoke about, who looks awesome.
There can't be another one that plays for Chiefs. Just have a look at the Chiefs team. I need to resolve this.
Right. By next podcast, we will have this all sorted. We've gone on far too long already. Thanks for listening, and we very much appreciate you listening. And if you're still listening now, you are incredible, and we thank you. And,
well done.
Well done. And we'll see you next time in a bit.
Bye-bye, Tim.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.